Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by the Rockstar Chronicles Series 1, my new book, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know. Available now at bookbaby.com. John McLaughlin began his career playing blues and rock in London in the early 1960s and went on to play free jazz with important British figures before moving to the United States in 1969. There he contributed rock and blues-derived guitar passages to Miles Davis's early fusion albums In a Silent Way and Bitches Brew, both in 1969, and played in Tony Williams' seminal jazz-rock trio Lifetime. In 1970, he became a disciple of spiritual guru Sri Chinmoy. He acquired the name Mahavishnu and formed the Mahavishnu Orchestra in 1971. They played concerts in rock rather than jazz venues and were among the handful of stars of jazz-rock fusion music. They recorded popular albums such as The Inner Mounting Flame and Visions of the Emerald Beyond. The involvement of electric violinist Jean-Luc Ponté in 1974-75 enhanced the orchestra's popularity. In the mid-1970s, McLaughlin left Chinmoy, abandoned the name Mahavishnu, and began playing acoustic guitar in his trio Shakti with Indian violinist El Shekhar and tabla player Zakir Hussain. Other notable later works by Ian McLaughlin included Five Piece Band Live in 2009, which won a Grammy Award for Best Jazz Instrumental Album. His recording of Miles Beyond from the 2017 album Live at Ronnie Scott's took the Grammy for Best Improvised Jazz Solo. In 2017, McLaughlin made what he said was his final tour, performing music from the various incarnations of the Mahavishnu Orchestra. Well, we've had Billy Cobham on several times, Jean-Luc Ponté, and Jan Hammer recently, and also bassist Jeff Berlin. And now, please welcome the band leader, guitarist and composer, pioneer of jazz fusion, John McLaughlin, Interviewing the Legends. Hello, John.
Well, hi, Ray. Is it Ram or is it Ray?
Ray.
Ray, okay. They wrote Z. Right, it's the Indian. Anyway, after that intro, I can hang up, right?
Yeah, you can hang up. Now we're done.
Very sweet of you. Anyway, so after that, what can I say? Well, you know everything.
I've had everybody from your band, Mahavishnu, on, and now I got you. So, and yeah. I talk to Billy Cobham a lot. He's a great guy.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we go back. One or two decades, you could say. Yeah, actually, we have this very nice anecdote with Billy. It must have been about, 20 years ago. And I was in Switzerland, you know, the Montreux Festival?
Yes.
So I've been going there since 1971. Only, and the years I didn't go, I've been, I don't know, I must have been 20 times a concert there, but it's so beautiful there. I would go even when I wasn't playing in the festival, and because the hiking in the mountains is just stunning, stunning scenery in the mountains. Anyway, so I was on a bike with my family. The other side is Lake, what they call Lake Geneva, and I got a call from Claude Knox, who's the founder of the festival.
Right.
And he said, are you busy? I said, no, here I am. You know, I'm here. I'm riding my bike on the other side of the lake. He said, can you play tonight? I said, I said, well, if you can give me a guitar, I'll play. I didn't have a guitar with me. He said, I got lots of guitars. I said, yeah, what happened? So, what's the name of this band? One of these glam bands.
Right.
And they got stuck in Montreal. And, he said, Billy's living, he's living in Switzerland, in Bern.
Right.
Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if you get hold of Billy, we'll go on stage with just the two of us and jam and fill in for you. And that's exactly what we did. We went on stage and played, you know, I mean, like, we haven't played in quite a few years.
Right.
All those old shows were in the head. Amazing. And we just the two of us went on stage and winged it. It was really special. Really special. Wonderful to get back and playing with Billy, because it's been a long time.
Yeah. You know, I'm surprised you weren't on the Spectrum album, you know?
On the Spectrum album? Didn't he have, really nice guitar player.
Tommy Bolin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't need me with Tommy Bolin. Tommy was a beautiful cat, too. Very nice guy. And a fine guitar player. No, I was very happy for Billy because he was branching out on his own, like Jerry and Jan.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a lot of success with that album. I was very happy for him.
He
didn't need me on that album.
I want to talk about your latest album, Is That So? That's very, very interesting album.
It's a different cup of tea, right, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Very, very different. But, you know, I appreciate that. I love world music. And I grew up in a household with my dad's family was Syrian, and I grew up with Kassoum, an Egyptian famous singer, and I grew up.
I know Kassoum. She was amazing.
She was good, huh?
Oh yes, Kassoum. What a voice she had!
Yes, she did.
She was amazing. Yeah! Wow! Tremendous. So you grew up with
Kassoum in the house.
And recording, yeah.
And then my mom was Cuban, so I grew up with Celia Cruz as well.
Oh, yeah. No, that Cuban influence has been very strong on jazz music since the 40s. I mean, Dizzy Gillespie's Cubana B, Cubana Bop.
Right.
At 1948, you know. Of course, I'm showing my age now, but, you know. Well, I was very young in 1948, but
right.
Even so, that was I was in Cuba in at what is officially known as the Bay of Gigs.
Yep.
In 1978.
Yeah.
It's for those who don't know, it's just a play on the Bay of Pigs invasion. Only it was a State Department tour.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. State Department tour, the Jazz Giants. And I went over there and I played with, we did, that was, what was the name of that band? The trio with Jaco Pastorius and mm-hmm. Tony Williams. The trio of doom. Jaco just pulled his title out like that. But that was because I'd known Jaco for many years.
Yeah.
I knew him when he first came up from Florida.
Right.
To New York. And I introduced him to Tony. That was really special. But I remember being in Cuba, you know, Cuba's the kind of place where you said, you know, I spent a wonderful 2 weeks there one weekend, but that's only because in that time, it was 1978, you know, we were walking around with them, the secret police,
right.
Or the plainclothes police, really,
yeah.
Following us everywhere. The thing is, that said, the Cuban people, And the level of musicianship in Cuba, whoa!
Mm-hmm.
I mean, outstanding, Ray, outstanding.
Yeah.
And beautiful people, too.
Good people. Yeah, they work.
Anyway.
Work very hard.
So,
the food is good. The food's excellent.
Yeah, no, I know the island is beautiful, too.
Yeah.
I know America with the socialism and all that, I know. But it's human beings in the end.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
It's unfortunate that ideology comes before humanity.
You know, all those guys have the really old cars, and they fix them up, and
I know.
And now they're worth a lot.
I saw them. Oh yeah,
they're worth a lot of money now.
Probably, but they've got like, you know, some of them got like Russian motors, Czech motors in them. You know, I mean, but they got the big Cadillacs of the 50s with the fins. No, I mean, they're beautiful. You're right. They're works of art now.
They're good mechanics.
They're collectors, right?
Yeah. Very good mechanics.
They're so outrageous. Yeah. Anyway, but the music, the Cuban music, and also a very dear friend of mine, Gonzalo Rubalcava, who is one of the greatest jazz pianists, I mean, Latin jazz pianists, if you want, of today. I mean, what a wonderful musician. Anyway, I know you've got some other questions for me apart from Cuba.
Well,
I love the island, that's all.
Yeah, it's a beautiful island. It really is. Is that so? I really enjoyed it. And
I'm glad.
Yeah, and it was, like you said, it was very different. You have Shankar Mahadevan and Zakir Hussain. Also on the album with you. Instruments are you playing on this?
Well, I did the orchestrations.
Okay.
I mean, the crazy idea, really, from the beginning. And, I mean, you've got to go back at least seven years now.
Mm-hmm.
It took 6 years to make, but that's just Shankar. I don't want to confuse him with Al Shankar, the violin player.
Right.
In the original Sakshi in the 70s.
Yep.
With Shankar Mahadevan, who's the singer.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, I mean, this guy, he's been in the Shakti group since 2000. And since then he became like one of the kings of Bollywood. You know what Bollywood is,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's the Indian musical.
Yes.
Song and dance movies.
Mm-hmm.
But he does the music. I mean, can you believe he sold like 230 million records and tapes in India? I mean,
wow.
This is astronomical. But this is since he joined Shakti. So, but we've been very close for now 20 years. And we were on tour with the Shakti group. Let's go back 7 or 8 years. And, you know, I've been working with Indian musicians really since, 1973, which is when the first Shakti was born. And we were doing like 12 concerts while I was doing the big concerts with Mahavishnu. Anyway, I had an idea because I'm, in a way, I've got a foot in both worlds, in India and in the West.
Right.
Because I studied Indian music. I studied with Ravi Shankar. I studied with Dr. Ramanathan. Of Wesleyan University, I was one of his students. So I've got a foot in both worlds. And we were on tour, and I said to Shankar, I said, you know, I want to harmonize your improvisation or some of the songs, some of the devotional songs that he sings. And he said, well, I don't know how that's going to turn out. I said, neither do I, you know. But send me, you know, maybe 2-3 minutes of one of those beautiful devotional songs, you know, they're all about love, you know, whether it's earthly or heavenly. And I went into my orchestra mode, and, you know, I had 2 pieces for guitar and orchestra, so I wasn't really in unknown territory, but I was in unknown territory in terms of orchestrating a voice that he sang with tanpura.
Mm-hmm.
You know what a tanpura is?
Yes,
right. Just one tone. That's because they don't have harmony in India. Okay,
right.
So he recorded the tanpura on one track, sang on the other. I heard what tonality he was saying, and then I threw the tanpura away and started to harmonize what he's doing. Okay, so it was quite a job because it was... In that sense, it was being able to follow the Indian improvisation and then harmonize it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I heard the first 10 seconds, I mean, I got shivers. And then I sent him about 20 seconds of his tune, and he cried. found his back. I just sent him an MP3 over the iPhone. And he called me immediately, and he was freaking. He said, "This is unbelievable." I said, "I know it is. I'm like, I'm freaking out myself." He said, "We got to make a record." I said, "Yeah, I just need a little time." So, but the thing is, he was busy. I was busy, mm-hmm. You know, even like touring with Shakti or touring with Fourth Dimension or, you know, whatever. Going around the world making my living. And but gradually, it developed into this, into Is That So. But within about a year, where I was talking to Shank and I said, you know, we're gonna have to have some improvisation in the middle. And for that, we gotta have Zaki, because he he's the best. He's unbelievable. The both of them are unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm an amazing company here, Ray. So finally, we did the recording. It was done in India. It was done here, Monte Carlo. It was done in California. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Was mixed in London, and you know, it's a really international affair. But the result is something that sometimes I listen to it, one of the pieces, and it just brings tears to my eyes, because that's how much emotion is in this album. I know, and it's not, and I played it to a friend of mine recently, who really liked music, but, you know, it's like this, these Indian singers, I don't know, man. It's weird. It's not everybody's cup of tea. Either, you know, you love to like it.
Sure.
Or you just don't like it, you know. And he said, I just cannot get into it. Anyway, just that aside, as you say, you enjoy it, but I think because you kind of were brought up with being exposed to different kinds of music.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Different kinds of cultural expressions, you know, like Cuban or other things.
Well, so, you know, Arabic music is very close to Indian music in a way. You know, the way they chant, you know, they're very, it's a little similar.
Well, I mean, there's some amazing Cuban jazz musicians too.
Yeah.
I don't know about Cuban rock. Mm-hmm. Do you know any Cuban rock bands?
I interviewed a guy, he's a blues player from Cuba. He was born in Cuba. Yeah, he's excellent too. I forgot his name off the, but he's friends with all the guys from Colorado, like you know, Joe Walsh, Joe Vitale, Kenny Passarelli. Okay. He's friends with all those guys. He grew up Tommy Bolin, and he's excellent. He's an excellent Cuban blues player. But
I'd like to hear him.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good. He's trying to make a name for himself. He, you know, he tours a lot, small clubs and things like that.
Well, not at the moment, Ray. I mean, everything is on the back burner. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just disastrous for me. I mean,
it's terrible.
And plus, you might be out of it. You've got a tropical storm moving in.
I know. Yeah, and you know, the COVID thing's very bad here in Florida.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And I've got, you know, Chick lives in, you're in Tampa, right?
Yeah, I'm close to Tampa, right.
Yeah, where Chick Corea lives, too. I mean, you know, I'm worried. I spent 14 years in America, right? I mean, I know a lot of people. I know that country so well.
Mm-hmm.
I think I love America more than some Americans. But that's another story. But, I mean, I'm worried. Look, I mean, even Europeans cannot go there. Americans cannot go to Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad. I was talking to Al DiMeola yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's in Jersey, but he's right next to New York.
Right.
And it's really bad. And, and I have other friends who I talk to them regularly. I just keep myself abreast of the news, but it's bad news most of the time.
I know.
And I'm afraid it's getting worse.
I know.
I mean, I don't want to go into this George Floyd, you know, and the Black Lives Matter. I mean, I've been associated with black music.
Sure.
Since I was 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it hurts to see kind of divided country.
Yeah. It's sad,
anyway,
isn't it?
We're not going to go there.
I know. No. It's pretty sad, though. It's, you know, with everything going on.
It hurts, yeah.
Yeah. Well, two of my favorite songs on the album. I like The Search. That's one of my favorite tunes. And and The Guru. That was one of my favorites as well.
That's deep, yeah, because he's getting down. And my guitar thing with the orchestra, This is just, I'm like a Western tambora.
Yeah.
Only instead of just like, I'm using these descending harmonies that come down regularly. Just that. So, you know, it's a real labor of love for all three of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I have to tell you that this one tune, the second tune called Saki.
Yes.
Which is a really sweet tune. And we just did that, you know, at home recording. Who's locked down in California. I'm here in Monte Carlo, and Shankar's in Mumbai in India.
Mm-hmm.
So we all recorded at home.
Mm-hmm.
So videotape is going to be coming out. We'll put it out on the net as soon as we finally get it all mixed, because we have to mix the audio and mix the video.
Right.
So, you know, it's a lot of work just to hopefully bring a smile. So you're gonna have one of the songs from that album coming out on the net pretty soon.
Awesome. You know, I've had a lot of Indian friends over the years. I've from Mumbai and also Kusharan. Is it Kusharan? And of course a lot of Patels. I've dealt with a lot of Patels.
That's like Smith, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I really admire the Indian culture, and they're so intelligent. You know, you get all your doctors now are from India, you know, and here in the United States. And they're great doctors.
Yeah.
Great doctors.
I mean, it's an amazing country. I would advise everyone, if they have a chance, to visit. It's like India is not a country. It's another planet.
Right, right.
I mean, you got 1.4 billion people.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And you have, it's a land of absolute extremes, because you do have extreme poverty,
mm-hmm.
and you have extreme wealth. But you have a fantastic culture, the musical culture and the spiritual culture. And also these two cultures are part of one culture, because you cannot separate the music from the spirituality or vice versa,
yep.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
No, it's such a special country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, remember, I'm going back now a long time, but growing up in the 60s, you know, okay, and you know, coming out of the whole psychedelic period,
yeah,
and we're all asking ourselves these very big questions about life and existence, and we all started looking to the East in general,
exactly,
India in particular.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking about the Beach Boys,
mm-hmm.
or even the Stones to some extent, the Beatles.
Yep.
You're looking for answers, because they've been addressing these questions for a long time and getting answers too. I think it's much easier these days, but in the 1960s, it was really hard to find answers to these very big questions. But this is why we all started meditating, because in the end, the answer to every question is knowing who you are, who you truly are, if you know what I mean. You know, not just my name is John McLaughlin, you know. I'm a being, I'm invisible. I'm just a spirit, you know, and I don't have a name. I don't even have a form.
Right.
But we all function, and we all have this body, and you got a name. But the thing is to learn to disidentify yourself with your name and your form. You know what I'm saying?
I do, yeah.
Because the answers to all the great problems of life can be found inside your own heart and mind. That's why I keep meditating after all these years.
Yeah. Have you reached, is it the fourth dimension? Have you reached that fourth dimension in meditation?
I would say, even beyond the fourth dimension. The fourth dimension is actually a reference to music. Because for music to exist, you have to have space and time. And that's what they call the fourth dimension.
Okay.
But in meditation, you can find absolute connectedness with the whole of life, the whole of existence, and this is really the way to fulfillment. And it's not, you know, people tell me, Joe, some musicians, yeah, I find my way in music, and I can take that. I can take that. But and to me, in a sense, music is a form, and it's what is behind the music. And then there's always the question, you know, because we're improvisers, and jazz, and rock and R&B,
right.
They're all improvising music.
Yep.
And so when it comes down to improvisation, what are you going to say is my question to you. What are you going to say when you improvise?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, there's only one thing we all can say. We just tell our story. And so that means, well, how rich is your story? And how deeply do you feel about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because if you don't feel strongly enough, it's just notes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and notes are notes. It's like words. But what meaning do you put in the words when you speak, for example? And it's the same thing. What meaning do you put in how deep you feel the notes that you're playing? And the thing about meditation and knowing yourself is you can access the really deep feelings of your life, but not just access them, is you are able to articulate them.
Right.
And this is really, this only comes from knowing who you are. Not that I'm there or anything, don't misunderstand me. Just because I don't meditate to get anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, sure.
I meditate because it's like I get and eventually have breakfast because
mm-hmm.
I have to eat. But I have to meditate because I don't want to lose, I love the contact with the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
I'm like a real hippie. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Sri Chinmoy, he was an amazing person. I read a lot about him. And
yes, he was, yes.
You would never think, you know, a spiritual leader like him would end up weightlifting, you know?
Yeah, and he was running, too. And playing tennis and painting.
He was amazing.
I mean, he was prolific in
yeah.
so many different ways.
Really, real renaissance guy.
A human being.
Yeah.
Truly.
It's a shame. It's a shame he died so young, though, you know, with all that, you know, because he was seemed like he was in great shape.
I think he was. I think he was. I think there was, I think that he had a heart attack, I believe.
Really?
I think some of the disciples, they were not sure what to do, you know,
mm-hmm.
because he kind of keeled over.
Right.
And I think time was lost.
That's
a
shame.
And this is fatal. And that's what happened to Paco.
That's right, yeah.
Paco was here, you know.
Yeah.
And he was playing football on the beach of Playa del Carmen in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And he had a heart attack. And by the time, but the problem was the hospital was quite a way. By the time they got him into the car and his wife driving him to the hospital, by the time they got to the hospital, he went into a coma and he never came out.
Mm.
You know, so this is a big problem. Like when something like that happens, is how quickly can you get
exactly?
Help?
Yeah.
And I think this was part of the problem, unfortunately.
Yeah. CPR might have helped, you know, keep him alive for a while. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm older than he was when he passed on.
Yeah. He was in the early 70s, I think, wasn't he? Like 72
yeah.
or something? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Another album I really enjoyed.
Life and Death, right?
I know.
Say again?
Another album I really enjoyed was Live in San Francisco. That's a great album. I really like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with those two, you had to bring it, and especially with Jimmy. Mm-hmm. Playing.
Yep. Jimmy Herring. Yep.
It was really adorable and such a lovely guitar player. And he grew up with Mahavishnu. And then we met, I mean, years ago, we started jamming time ago, and I just really, actually the very first time I heard him, he had recorded one of the Maharishi shows, but he played a solo on it. And then when I heard that, I said to myself, why didn't I play a solo like that? No, it was outstanding. So, and we got to know each other, and finally for this kind of goodbye tour, we all got together, you know, and we ended up being, I don't know, 9 or 10 musicians on the stage, two bassists, 2 keyboards, 2 guitars, 2 drums. I mean, we had a ball. And what a beautiful guy. And a great band he had, too. So,
meeting
life goes on, but we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, with the, everywhere, it's not just America, Europe.
It's everywhere.
Asia, Australia, Latin America.
I know.
I mean, nothing. And it's not just concerts, but theater, you know, I mean, dance, it's all down. Everything's down.
Yeah.
Such an impact this virus had.
It's such a lousy year. Nobody will forget 2020.
Oh yeah, I want to start 2020 next January.
Exactly.
Do this year. this is really hard.
I know it has been hard.
You know, we got some stuff coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did a thing with Carlos and with Nard and Michael Wallace. Did a thing with Cindy Blackman Santana and with the band with the Fourth Dimension. I mean, I started to do a few already by the end of March, just to encourage people to stay at home, because the hospitals over here at the time, in Europe, the hospitals were full. And then it started to calm down, and so with the Fourth Dimension and the video with Carlos, we were making kind of hope to get just donations for musicians. There are 2 institutions that take care of musicians. One with the Grammys, and the other is the Jazz Foundation. And they take care of musicians who are really, you know, because you know these self-employed musicians, they're not protected like companies or shops, you know, employees.
It's true.
Self-employed people fall through the cracks.
Yeah.
I know, because I talk to friends of mine in America, and one almost fell through the cracks. I mean, bad news.
I know.
It's really hard. And now you guys, you've just been caught, haven't it? Starting this week, or from $600 to $200.
Yeah,
that's hard.
It's terrible. Hard. Terrible to have a whole tour canceled just like that. You know, it really is.
The whole year.
Yeah, the whole year.
I mean, I would be just now returning from a European tour. The whole month of July.
Mm.
I don't know how many concerts. Yeah. And then Japan in October, November, that's gone.
Yeah.
And even the promoters that I know who we were supposed to work with this year, they're not sure about next year even. You know, and some of them took a bath too.
Yeah.
So it's really, yeah, you know, when is the theater going to start?
I know.
We don't know. Anyway, we just got to try to stay healthy and just wear that mask.
Yep.
You know, and don't infect anybody, even if you got it, and don't be infected. No, but it's terrible. I mean, I've lost friends.
I know.
From this cursed virus.
Yeah.
What can we do? People lost family, loved ones.
John, one good thing came out of 2020, and I talked to Rick Wakeman not long ago, and he's got an album, you know, referencing Mars, and all the every song is a place on Mars, different volcanoes and this and that. I'm excited about the Mars project and us going back to space again. How about you?
Yeah, are you kidding? I'm a science fiction freak since I was a teenage.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. The Martian Chronicles, Ray Bradbury, I'm not sure if you ever read those.
Oh, yeah.
Great,
Isaac Asimov, I've read all those.
Yep.
Yep. What is your take on, do you think we've been visited by, extraterrestrials? You think they've been here already?
Well, I've seen what I would consider an unearthly vehicle in the night sky. So I don't know what kind of shape it was, but the way it moved, we don't have that yet.
Right.
And the thing is, I'm convinced that the universe is full of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's a height of arrogance to think that we're just sitting here alone on our little mediocre planet,
right,
next to a mediocre solar system in the middle of a mediocre galaxy, none of which is mediocre. It's all right, but amazing. But it's like, how can we be so arrogant?
Yeah.
And there's an infinite universe that's like, and it's full of life. It's full of life.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it's there. The thing is the nearest life is a long way away. So the only way we can get there is to be really developed as human beings, and really developed, of course, at the same time technologically, because there's no way we can get there. To the nearest star, what is it, 4 light years? So in earthly terms, it's going to take, even if you're traveling like, I don't know, a tenth of the speed of light, it's 40 years. Who's going to go on a 40-year travel? No, unfortunately, we're not ready. We're not. Anyway, as humanity, we're definitely not ready. We're much too violent.
I know.
Much too stupid.
We are stupid.
We're not ready. We're not ready. We're not ready for them to visit us.
I think you're right.
We're definitely not. If they can visit us, that means they're way ahead already.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I think it's time for a little patience. Anyway.
John, here's your final question. I get an interesting answer from everybody from this. You might have a hard time with this because you know so many people and you played and jammed with so many people. If you had a Field of Dreams wish to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Well, I got to jam with Jimmy,
mm-hmm.
and I think I would really like that opportunity again. The guitar I had one of these acoustic electric guitars, and it was just, I mean, the volume in the studio was killing,
mm-hmm.
and my acoustic electric guitar was freaking out, so, just from the volume, so I couldn't really play properly, but that's a long time ago. Mitch Mitchell took me there, because I knew Mitch, because
mm-hmm.
we were both in Georgie Frame, the Blue Frames.
That's right.
Back in the early 60s in London, and Mitch was a big, great fan of Tony Williams.
Mm-hmm.
He used to come and see us every time he was there. So, if I had the chance, I'd like to play with Jimmy.
With Jimmy again. Do you think Jimmy would have been into fusion, later, if he was still around?
I think he was already into fusion.
Yeah.
Jimmy was a revolutionary.
Yeah.
He was a revolutionary. I mean, do you want just an attestation of that? You just listen to the way he plays the Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah.
The national anthem.
Yeah.
The national, like, what was it, 68, was it?
Right, 68, 69.
Pop?
Yep.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. One of those concerts in the late 60s. It's a work of art.
Mm-hmm.
It's so original, such a powerful statement. It's so emotional. I was talking about emotion before. I mean, it's just the way he's what has he got? A wah-wah pedal, amp and a guitar.
That's right.
That's it.
No bells and
whistles.
None
of the gadgets.
Yeah.
Just a wah-wah pedal, a guitar, and that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable. So beautiful. That's really like, for me, that is the Star Spangled Banner, because it's, at the same time, the most powerful anti-war tune I ever heard.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing? Yeah, so if I had the chance, it would be Jimmy. God bless him. But he left when he was 27, like a lot of other.
It's a real shame.
People.
Yeah.
I don't know, that 27 was, that's a hard year. Too many people.
Way too many.
The way, 27.
Yep.
Janis Joplin, 27.
Jim Morrison.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Jim Morrison, 27.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you said.
Great talking with you, Ray.
Well, you said McLaughlin. You said something about the guitar is simply part of your body, and you feel more comfortable when a guitar is present. I think that was also Jimmy probably felt the same way, don't you think?
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Because just now, I mean, don't forget. Well, and he was playing less than I've been playing now, but it's like. It's like an extension of my body.
Right,
now,
right.
I'm happy when the guitar is dead. That's why I've always got a guitar near me.
Exactly. John, you are an incredible guitar player, man, and a fantastic band leader. I thank you for everything you've done and look forward to a lot more music from you.
Oh, thank you. At my tender age, yeah, I'm still going. I'm still going, Ray. Thank you so much for your consideration.
You're still a young guy.
I'm good.
Thank you, John. Thanks for being on the show. Keep in touch.
Hey, my pleasure. You take care of yourself, Ray.
All right, you too. Be safe. Be safe. Bye-bye.
Be safe. Be healthy.
Be healthy. Be okay. Exactly. Bye-bye now. Purchase the latest releases by John McLaughlin. Is that so? 6 years in the making, the album brings together the three visionary musicians in a musical landscape never explored before. 6 years in the making, Is That So? Is one of John McLaughlin's deepest and most profound musical collaborations with prolific Indian composer and vocalist Shankar Mahadevan. Joining the duo is their long life friend and musical brother, Ustad Zakir Hussain, on the tabla, who has been collaborating with John since they founded Shakti in the early 70s, acknowledged by most to be the first groundbreaking crossover East-West musical group. Also purchased John McLaughlin Live in San Francisco, John McLaughlin and the Fourth Dimension with Jimmy Herring and The Invisible Whip. Live in San Francisco is the live album from John McLaughlin and Jimmy Herring with The Fourth Dimension and The Invisible Whip, which was captured at the Warfield on December 8, 2017, as part of the Farewell American Tour of John McLaughlin. The recording features the third set, which features the classic Mahavishnu Orchestra music written by John McLaughlin. Both releases are available now at Amazon.com. For more information about John McLaughlin, visit www.johnmclaughlin.com, his official website, or www.facebook.com/John McLaughlin Official on Facebook. He's also on Twitter, www.twitter.com/JMCL_GTR. Also, www.ShankarMahadevan.com, Shankar Mahadevan's official website, and Zakir Hussain's official website is www.ZakirHussain.com. Very special thanks to Ina Beren of Abstract Logic Agency for arranging this interview with John McLaughlin and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, please contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. And, of course, my new book is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1. Chronicles truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends the world will ever know. Peace to you, good health, stay safe, have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.